Whoa! Rhythm bada bada.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Neowin cast. Today is Monday, June the 26th, and we have a different cast this week. A different cast of people from the Neowin staff. I'm Paul Lardiop from the Neowin news team. And joining me are two usual suspects, Chris Vendemio, BangBang023 from the forums, Shane Pittman from the forums, our chief news editor for Neowin, and our new panel member, Don Smith, California, who actually made it through traffic today to join us. He's been either stuck in traffic or busy or doing shipping or whatnot for the last few shows, so we welcome Don.
Finally.
And, we're ready to go here. Yeah, finally he made it. It's been a long time coming. He was on our first cast, I believe, the first Neowin newscast we did. So we'll get right into it this week. We have a whole bunch of topics to do, general news, and then we'll get into a quick discussion on how to secure your PC. I guess not how to secure your PC, more of a what we do and what we recommend to all our friends as uber techno geeks to secure your PC. So the first piece of news we have this week, Microsoft has scrapped WinFS for Windows Vista. And WinFS is short for Windows Future Storage, and it was the code name for a data storage and management system based on relationship databases that Microsoft was working on since about 2003. So Microsoft has scrapped WinFS. They're going to use what's left of it and roll it up into different product offerings that'll be coming down eventually. So this is yet another thing that Microsoft has completely dropped from Windows Vista, and now it's completely dropped off their technology roadmap.
I can't help but, I don't want to say that I'm not disappointed, because I am, but it's almost to the point where it's kind of like, well, there goes another one. You know, WinFS was something that everyone looked forward to with great anticipation when it was first announced. But having WinFS basically dropped from Vista, announced it was dropped from Vista, and then with the expectation that maybe we'll see it in a service pack or whatnot in the future, that was okay. Now they're saying, nope, sorry, WinFS as we described it and as you knew it, thought about it, for Vista is never going to happen. You know, certain features of it, attributes will be included in other platforms, other products, but as for the operating system, it's gone. And that kind of stinks. We may see it in a future OS or something built off of that idea in a future OS, but it was something that I was really looking forward to, and I hate to see that it's basically, for all intents and purposes, gone.
Yeah, you know, me, the main focus of WinFS for me was the whole idea of virtual folders, and once they announced quite a while back that they were going to pull it out, at that point, it wasn't that big of a deal for me. I mean, I didn't even know if they were going to keep it in there, like they said, or not, edit it in a service pack one, like they were saying originally. And, I read the news about WinFS, and after the, man, another thing got dropped reaction, it was like, well, big deal. What am I personally missing out on at this point? Some people will have my head for it, but I don't think for the average end user that it's really that big of a deal. It's not huge, huge to the average consumer. For guys like us, obviously, it's something we knew about, we understood, we all wanted in there. It was a great advancement. But for the average person, they're probably not going to even know it exists, and never mind going to miss having it in there.
Well, yeah, you're not. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the case, but this was one of the biggest features I was looking forward to. That, I mean, obviously, a lot of the features, but it's just another great thing being cut from an operating system with all these bells and whistles we were promised. I mean, I understand deadlines and so forth, but when you look at what they've been working on this OS for 5 years now, this is a huge disappointment for me. I was really looking forward to this new file system, and I don't know. It's leaving me at the point where I just honestly don't know what's left I'm really looking forward to with Vista, other than an updated GUI.
Yeah, even though Vista or WinFS wasn't scheduled to be in Vista anymore, it's just yet another example of things being dropped from what's supposed to be a complete next-gen OS for Microsoft, which really isn't going to be a next-gen OS for Microsoft. I guess we should just go through quickly each of us, too. We're all looking forward to Vista, obviously, because we're techno nuts. We all love anything new technology, get to play with it. But I don't know. I'm going to have a hard time recommending people upgrade from XP to Vista, especially just because we've seen there's a new build that's out, too, if you haven't noticed, build 5456. I haven't played with it. None of the guys on the cast have here, so we decided not to cover it this week. But what are you guys looking forward to right now? In terms of what's going to be included, what we know is going to be included, what's, I guess, the number one thing you're looking forward to in Vista?
You know, I have to say that I think the biggest thing that users in general are going to have to look forward to are the security upgrades, which that's to be expected, though. I mean, you know, that's not to say that it's revolutionary, because you're looking at an OS upgrade. You would expect the next generation to learn from the mistakes of the past and the security issues of the past and to be a more secure platform. I was reading through some of the comments on the forums, the NeoN News article, you know, Microsoft scrapped WinFS for Windows Vista. And some of the comments are indicative of how we have covered this story in the past. You know, there are lists of features that are out there that detail what is going to be left in Vista. But, you know, at the same time, if you look at that list compared to what Vista was supposed to contain originally, and you know, a lot of the big key features that I was really looking forward to, that I thought were really going to make it, you know, a vast change in an OS, are no longer there. And if we remember back to Microsoft making the statement that, you know, they wanted to have the biggest press release and have, you know, the hype and everything, that outdo the hype that XP had and whatnot, I just don't think the product warrants that. I mean, I think we're almost looking at, you know, I don't know, the difference between 95 and 98, or, you know, 90, 95 and ME, maybe. I don't know. This just isn't the big anticipation that, that I was experiencing last year before last, you know, before they started dropping everything.
I still think, though, overall, I mean, there's some good features to look forward to. You have DirectX 10, the GPU-driven UI. You have, you know, the enhanced security, the fact that IE 7 Plus is going to run in its own security zone away from the rest of the operating system. Things like that, I mean, maybe they're not huge like WinFS, maybe they're not huge like the original idea of having a vectorized interface that's freely scalable, but there's still a lot of good changes there. Which, getting at the extra features such as, the ability to boost, quote-unquote, boost performance by using a flash drive and a USB slot. You have the implementation and the use of the abilities of hybrid hard drives, which, you know, will speed up the system greatly, especially when coming back from standby and such like that. There's still a lot of usability fixes. I just don't think there's as many big changes as we would have hoped. It's a large group of small changes at this point, instead of a lot of wow, 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 and then the list of small things. We sort of lost all the big things along the way.
Yeah, I have to agree with you fully, Chris and Shane. I'm obviously looking forward to the same features that you guys have mentioned. You know, the enhanced security. It is basically, there's a lot of optimizations that they've done, and I'm gonna buy it. I mean, I know all you guys are gonna buy it, but it is what it is. They've cut it. There's nothing you can do about it at this point, but. Yeah, I mean, I can't really add anything other than what you guys have already pointed out. I think those are really the biggest features that most people are looking forward to at this point.
Yeah, but for a common end user that gets a Vista preloaded on their PC after Christmas, I guess the greatest thing for them is going to be the updated UI, the ability to have everything look pretty and have bigger icons on your desktop. I guess that'll be the most dramatic feature for most people who don't really aren't power users of their OS. So Vista is coming, and we're all going to buy it, and it's going to be interesting, because I guess the thing I'm looking forward to the most would be not so much the security, what you guys were looking forward to, but just the whole support for devices. It won't be so hard now to go get device drivers, and device drivers have been tightened up. If you guys have ever supported an office full of computers, you know what a pain it is to find device drivers that are right. Now they're going to have this driver rating system, and a lot of the OEMs that traditionally have just released drivers on spur of the moment, editing a few INF files together, they're not going to pass. They'll get like a red or a yellow rating instead of green, meaning it's been tested. I guess green would be the equivalent of what's WHQL right now. It's just a really tightened up version of it. So that's probably what I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I agree. I forgot about that one. Then that all boils down to stability. You know, they're trying to package everything into a more stable environment, and that's obviously something that a hardcore user or a novice user, all of us could look forward to.
I don't want our listeners to get me wrong. You know, I'm not saying that I don't believe Vista's worth, you know, the upgrade. It most definitely. I mean, you know, like I said, it's going to have security enhancements, security features, security improvements that have been built on the experiences and the lessons learned of the past and features and you know whatnot that users have requested, and the stability concerns, the driver issues, things like that. All of this is things that Microsoft have learned from the past. You know, over the years of development with their other operating systems up to this point. And that's what my point is, that's to be expected. The groundbreaking features are what's being cut, and that's what I'm going to miss. You know, the revolutionary changes, the things that are coming make the OS definitely worthwhile upgrading to, just for the enhanced security and stability and the ease of administration. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the wow factor, I guess, is what I'm getting at, has been removed.
Yeah, but it'll be a forced upgrade for everyone that buys a new computer, because Microsoft will not preload an old operating system for anyone anymore. So like we talked in the last cast, that's going to be their main method of distribution after corporations. Keeping with Vista here, Microsoft developer has sort of come out and said he knows why, or can put his finger on the reason why Vista's so late. And he said it's because the code's way too complicated. Because we talked last week as well, all the backwards compatibility and legacy support that Microsoft is insisting on keeping, unlike Apple, that completely revamped the OS for OS X and have all these emulation layers and whatnot to run older programs. He also says bureaucracy is a big reason why Vista is so late. There's up to 11 different layers of management between Gates, who was up until now a complete full cheap software architect for Microsoft. Now he's transitioning out of the company to spend more time with his charitable endeavors. But he says, yeah, bureaucracy and all the managers and directors and whatnot you have to go through to get a decision made to add or change something in the OS. This is the first guy that we've seen so far, I think, that's come out and said, look, this is what's really going on. Microsoft has released a press release saying, well, it's his opinion and he's entitled to it, but it's one voice among thousands of developers that communicate to the public through Microsoft. So I don't know, it's an interesting perspective. Maybe this was a taboo subject or that nobody wanted to touch on, but now this guy has opened up. But I don't know, I find it kind of interesting.
Well, I think we've known for a while that there has to be some kind of screw-ups at Microsoft. I mean, they had the big management shift as it was a few months ago, and that kind of gave signs that, well, maybe things weren't going exactly all that well, but from what this guy describes, it sounds like a place I would not want to work at. I mean, the fact that you have to go through 11, if you're a bottom-level developer, you have to go through 11 stages of management to get a decision made. Are you kidding me? You can't get anything done in a reasonable time if you have to go through that many people. And then he goes on to say how you know, that it takes 24 hours to actually compile the OS on a dual processor system, and that goes back to what you were saying about, you know, all this legacy support is really starting to weigh on the size of Vista, and that's going to slow it down in the end. Anytime you have bloat and unnecessary code, unnecessary in the term of, you know, for new applications and new uses, it's going to harm things. I said it last week and I'll say it again, they got to get that stuff out eventually, because you're going to have a bigger and bigger beast, and it's only going to get harder and harder to manage. And I actually laugh at the point where he says that the management often manages, tells them how to do something instead of telling them just what to do. Can you imagine that? It reminds me of the old an old gentleman I used to help who would literally, I was trying to help him out, and he'd tell me I was doing things wrong. You never want to hear that from the people you're doing stuff for. You just want to know what the goal is and do it your way. As long as it works, as long as it's 100% correct, who cares how it's done? You know, eventually they have to let the developers just do the developing and leave all the higher end decisions, you know, between themselves and just get them out of the way as quickly as possible. Forget the paperwork, forget the bureaucracy. He said something about, because of all the decision making too and all the bloat, that these coders are only putting out on average 1,000 lines of code a year, which is just ridiculous. You can't be in a huge company like Microsoft and only get out 1,000 lines of code a year. That's bad. That's inefficiency.
Well, yeah,
right,
you
there.
Have a situation. You have a situation where there's just too many people's fingers in the pot of development, and you're obviously going to. I mean, you would think that they'd have a common focus or a common goal, but you got too many people involved in the process management-wise. You're going to lose a lot of your focus and your goal for completion. And I mean, any business, and not just a software, that's the end result that you're going to have. And this is probably one of the major reasons why we're not able to see. A lot of the features that we're looking forward to being put into the final product.
Right. I agree with what you guys have said. And, you know, I think if we step back and look at the overall project itself, take what this developer has to say and look at the overall project, the timeline, the events that have happened in the development of the project with people getting cut for, you know, goals not being met and features being dropped and whatnot. You know, it kind of all fits together to form, you know, the end process and the end conclusion that we've all came to numerous times. You know that there's a lot of things here that have hurt Vista overall. You know, all of the stumbling blocks that they've had, all of the problems that they've had implementing features and then having to just drop them and go back to the drawing board and start over. And then, you know, having this come out has basically just opened a lot of people's eyes to what we've kind of said all along. And, you know, Microsoft, you know, that they apparently don't have a problem with it. They, you know, have historically, as far as, you know, recent history goes, encouraged their higher end developers and whatnot to comment and speak their mind, and you know I don't oppose that, but you know at the same time, you know, this guy's basically saying, you know, management has screwed up several times. We've got some problems with the code base. It's just bloated, which is something that, you know, like Chris said, we talked about last week. You've got all of that legacy code in there. At what point in time is Microsoft going to pull an Apple and go, okay, you know, end of the road, we've got to move on, we've got to take all this stuff out and go on from here?
Yeah, we should point out that this is one blogger that's so far come out of what Microsoft's saying is 3,000 employee bloggers. But I'm still of the mindset that maybe this was a topic that people really didn't want to discuss or get out into the public spotlight. But now that this one guy has done it, it'll be interesting to see if anyone else comes out and says the same thing to confirm what Mr. Philip Hsu is saying, who's the developer.
Well, yeah, I think one thing that Microsoft, by not pulling the blog, I think maybe in some sense they're saying maybe he has some validity to his claims. I think they know they're screwing up. He even says that they're trying to fix things now, which is obviously an indication that they know something is broken. And, you know, if you're a fan of Microsoft, you got to hope for the best. You got to hope they simplify the process and get back to their roots of just putting out software, good quality software that works. Don't flame me for the good quality software comment. Because otherwise, if you keep adding bureaucracy, keep adding more people, larger code base, you're going to have a disaster. You know, Vista's already experienced a lot of problems. Can you imagine what the next operating system is going to be like?
We wanted to say too quickly that Microsoft has detailed a few plans because Windows Vista isn't going to be ready for Christmas or for back to school. So you can imagine all those people, especially for Christmas time, with Vista coming out preloaded on systems in January. They want to have a nice computer under the tree or a computer to give as a gift for family members. So what they're going to do now is similar to what happened for Windows XP release, is where they're going to give you a coupon when you buy your new system that comes preloaded with a version of Windows XP, saying, okay, you bought a system within a certain time frame of us releasing Vista. Once Vista comes out, you can go and buy it for a ridiculously discounted price. For Windows XP, it was $39 if your system had Windows ME or Windows 2000 or 98 on it. I forget which one. Any of the pre-Windows XP OSs, though, you could upgrade. It'll probably be a basic version of the OS, because there's different tiers to Windows Vista, especially the home editions people will be using. If you have Home Basic, you don't get any of the Aero interface or anything like that. If you have Home Premium, you do. So I'm thinking that Microsoft will just give you the option of upgrading to Home Basic, and then you'll still have to pay the full upgrade price to get Home Premium, unless your OEM cuts a good deal with Microsoft. So it's interesting. They had to do something like this because it's one of the biggest times of the year for them to sell PCs, and they're just messing people up, selling them an old OS, unless they offer them some incentive like this to go out and buy a PC before Vista gets preloaded.
Exactly. It's a good move on their part in order to save face. I mean, there's another thing that they couldn't deliver as promised. But, as a business standpoint, it's good that they're attempting to do something to calm the fears of the OEM distributors and so forth. I honestly don't think a lot of home users are going to really care. I think it's more of the power user who's going to care. I'm glad that they're doing something like this to help protect the OEMs.
I don't mean to be the curmudgeon of the group, you know, and I brought this up in the pre-show, and I'm not a Microsoft hater, nor am I a fanboy. So, I mean, you know, I call it like I see it for any company. But I can't help but imagine that there's a bean counter sitting somewhere at Microsoft going, okay, well, we're going to send out all these PCs with XP on them, and we're gonna send out these coupons, and, you know, we're going to offer these upgrades to Vista for, you know, ridiculously low prices, and out of all of these coupons that we're going to send out, we anticipate that this percentage of them are only actually going to be used, because you and I both know, you know, everyone knows, you're gonna have a large percentage of users that are going to buy these systems with XP on them. They're going to take them home, they're going to get them, you know, preloaded, they're going to get them loaded with their software, they're going to get them configured the way they want them, they're going to get everything set up and adjusted, and they're not going to really be interested in, okay, well, what do I gain if I switch to Vista? Are all my settings going to be there? Are all of my applications going to work with Vista? Is everything going to be, you know, okay to go with Vista, or what am I looking at doing? There's going to be a lot of people that are just going to say, skip it, you know, and like I said, there's a bean counter at Microsoft that has those figures estimated.
Yeah, one thing too, you got to realize this is good business practice on Microsoft's part. They count on the OEMs to spread their OS, especially Vista, which is probably mostly going to be spread through the OEMs. And holiday time. Sorry, got to be politically correct here. But the holiday season is a huge, huge season as far as profits go for these Dells and Gateways of the world. And if you have suddenly a large portion of the market holding off on purchasing a computer, it's going to hurt the very people, it's going to hurt the very companies that Microsoft is relying on to basically get their product out there. So this is basically them saying, we screwed up, we're going to help you guys out a little bit because we need you, and here's what we're going to do. Sell this to customers, let them know they get a free upgrade or a cheap upgrade, and we'll hope for the best. Hopefully most of them won't use it. Hopefully we won't lose that much money on it, but we'll keep everyone happy. That's what it comes down to.
Yep, like we said, they had to do something like this. It doesn't really make sense if you're going to launch your next-gen OS and not give any incentive to the people who go out and buy a computer beforehand, or I guess within about a month or two before Vista launches. So this week in Chris's, like, are you serious file, the MPAA has named, or TorrentSpy has named a hacker that MPAA in the States used to get into their email system, and he's a Canadian. who got paid $15,000 for information on TorrentSpy and their executives to be used by the MPAA for legal action against the company. I mean, this is right back to the basic moral principle that, well, can you justify doing an act like to get rid of all the illegal things on TorrentSpy by doing something illegal in and of itself, like hacking into their systems past all the security? I just can't take people like the MPAA and the RIAA serious anymore. They don't go about this the right way. What they're doing doesn't make any sense to me at all, and it's not deterring. I don't think it's having the deterring effect I think they want it to have.
What gets me is, can we not go a week without the MPAA or the RIAA stepping in something? I mean, come on, guys. What are you doing? What are you thinking? You're an organization that, at the core of your business, your supposed objectives are to stop illegal activities, those illegal activities being piracy. Yet you hire a hacker to break into a torrent, the parent company of a torrent provider, to steal information on this company to use against them. And not only that, you're going through their garbage, digging out, you know, things out of their trash. Come on, where do you get off proclaiming to be the saviors of copyright, yet you're willing to turn your back on the, you know, the legal and moral standards that you claim to be defending, and do this, you know, these heinous illegal activities? I mean, pot calling the kettle black, please.
Yeah, I mean, in America, as crazy as things can get here sometimes, we do still have the whole idea of search warrants. You know, you need to get permission to do stuff like this, and it needs to be done by an official authority, not a hacker. So what were these morons thinking? This is obviously a slip of judgment. Well, what a stupid slip of judgment. Who's the corporate guy who decided, yeah, let's hire this guy to hack into their systems and no one will find out? You gotta be kidding me. You can't possibly be that stupid and be in such a high position of power. That's just, I don't know, there's no words for the stupidity on their part in deciding to do this. I mean, they could have easily turned the guy down. But, you know, he made the offer, they gave him a written out contract, and paid him $15,000 to get the information. Nah, you can't do that.
I mean, we can all agree that the MPAA is just trying to protect their interests and their property. I mean, we would do the same thing, but this is a surprising move to me. The MPAA seemed to be really going about things in a smarter way than the RIAA. They as if they had learned from watching the mistakes that they made. So this is a bit of a shock to see them pull something like this, and I'm glad that it's been brought out. I'm glad that this was caught and brought out to the public's attention. This is not the way to credibly tackle this the piracy situation by submitting yourself to the same different type of illegal activity.
I think the first step in order to curb piracy and software piracy is to first earn the respect and the trust of all the people that you're supposedly representing, in addition to the financial interests of the movie industry and the recording industry. If we don't respect you guys at all, I mean, yes, we should be listening to what you say, but when you go behind our backs and use hacking to get into their systems, I mean, that's pretty amazing. So the folks over at Gator, a company called Claria, you've probably been infected with it or seen a computer infected with it before, have decided to suddenly go honest. They're introducing products centralized around personalized search for your computer, and they've promised to completely exit the adware business before October of this year. I've seen many a computer infected with Gator delivering quote-unquote targeted ads to their computer in order to help people. I don't understand. Like, I mean, yay for them going legal or not so intrusive anymore, but I'm not going to trust you after what you've done to so many systems in the world. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, what bothers me is that the fact that these are the same geniuses that's were fighting people who were calling their software spyware. You know, they were really ticked off. How can you call it spyware? It's not spyware. And now they're saying, Well, you might want to uninstall it. It's not the greatest software in the world to have on your system. What are you kidding me? You can't just do an about face like that and not expect anyone to say, wait, what? Hold on. What did you just say? You know, you have to remain consistent. At least come out and say, look, we screwed up. We offered a product that really wasn't best for our consumer. We're going to try to correct that now. They're just basically covering up the facts that they've been stealing information and infecting tons of system with spyware and pop-up ads for years now. Give me a break. I don't want to hear it. I'm never going to use their personalized web search. I'm never going to recommend Claria to anybody. Stick to Google, Windows Live, whatever portal except Claria, because it's obvious you can't trust them.
Yeah, well, obviously, everybody here will state that they're a company that's not to be trusted. This is obviously a move of their part for, I don't want to say legitimacy, because they're not a company that, there's a lot of faith in. This is simply a move on their part to fix their image, so to speak, what had happened last year. That's all that this is. It's just trying to clear up their image and put themselves in a better light for the next step of raping that they do on people's computers.
Well, I have to agree with, it's like Paul said earlier, this is their candy-coated, coming out and saying, okay, it's maybe not the best idea to have this stuff on your system, and we're going to go into a different business model here. You know, we're going to enter the personalized search market. Okay, well, basically what they're saying is we're taking all of the processing and all of the data collection off of your PC, and we're going to let you come to us and give us that information willingly. You know, basically we're going to let you come to us and use us to search for things, and then we'll collect that data from you as you're searching based on your search terms and whatnot. So, I mean, it's not like they're just, they still have your best interests at heart here. I mean, it is what it is.
You gotta realize too, even this web portal that they're touting, your personalized web portal, they even claim that they're using the information gathered by the GAIN software, the Claria software as they're calling it now. What? This is like them saying, really, we're gonna be honest, you can trust us now, but ha ha ha, suckers, we got your information, and then running off to make a profit. I don't even know what else to say except what are you kidding me again, because this is seriously beyond comprehension on any level.
You know when Chris drops the "What are you kidding me?" bomb, he means it. So, stay away from Claria is what we're trying to say. Don't trust them.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Don't. So, our last little bit of news for this week before we get into our discussion on security: Blu-ray has launched. Blu-ray is a direct competitor to HD DVD for this new high-def formats that are coming out. I guess Chris, we'll start with you quick because you have the most hands-on experience. I guess not hands-on. You've seen it the most, as compared to any of us. Blu-ray, and you've seen HD DVD side by side, and what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I work with this stuff on a daily basis, and I gotta tell you, neither format right now is impressing me, and I think it comes back to the machines themselves. The HD DVD player had a lot of issues, doesn't do 1080p, slow to boot up, and the Blu-ray machine from Samsung isn't free of issues either. A lot of people are saying that a lot of the image quality problems are stemming from the HDMI connection. You switch it over the component, and suddenly the picture looks better. Today was the first time I got to see the Blu-ray machine running a Blu-ray demo disc. Before, I was just watching it upconvert a regular DVD, which did a terrible job at, by the way. And the Blu-ray disc, what I noticed was the stuff filmed, the extra clips filmed specifically for that demo disc, looked very good. Great on the 1080p Samsung LCD we also had set up. However, the movies, such as I was telling you guys before, Chicken Little, you can see color banding in some points. When the chicken dude was playing, the chicken dude is what I'm going to call him. He was playing baseball and he had a red helmet on, and you can actually see bands of color going through the helmet, and you could tell that there was some color depth issues running on the HDMI. You can't expect people to adopt technologies when both sides of the party are putting out some pretty faulty machines right now. And I think the lesson that you walk away from it is, don't buy either machine right now. Don't buy HD DVD. Don't buy Blu-ray. Both machines have problems with them. We don't know if either format's going to be around a year from now. And the fact is, it's not worth plunking down $500 for HD DVD or $1,000 for Blu-ray when you're not going to get a machine that functions 100% the way you expect it to. And for those of you who are curious, as far as returns and all go, we haven't had any HD DVD machine return, but the only Blu-ray player that my store actually has in stock right now is actually a return that customer wasn't satisfied with it.
You know, I have to agree with what Chris said. In the little bit that I've read and looked into it and that we've discussed about both of these platforms, if you're a consumer, don't buy either one right now. We're talking about first generations of both of these systems. You know, I don't think either one of them is you know, the definitive, this is going to be the platform for your home theater, your home entertainment system. I think, you know, it would be, you know, it would be a foolhardy decision to jump into either one right now without letting them both come out and let some revisions get made, and let's let the smoke clear a little bit and see where, you know, where each one lands. You know, I just don't think you know, unless you're just, you know, just one of these diehard, you know, bleeding edge technology people, you know, I don't think that the average consumer should run out and jump on either one right now.
Right. What it all boils down to is, as far as technology goes, high def is here to stay. It's just something that's going to be perfected as time goes on. Blu-ray is not something that has been fully accepted and adopted by everyone. It could be the next Betamax for all we know. So the suggestion would be to really sit back and I mean, if it's something that you're interested in, the prospect of what this could be is exciting, but it may not be something that's kept.
Well, you say Blu-ray isn't accepted by everyone. Unfortunately, neither is HD DVD, and that's where the customer winds up getting screwed over because you don't know what you're getting anymore. You might buy a movie that's not going to work in your player because you accidentally bought the wrong format, or someone bought the wrong format for you, which is a ridiculous idea. I think in the end, what we have to do is look at, down the line, both LG and Samsung have announced they're both toying with the idea of releasing a dual format player. And that's going to be the way to go. That's going to be the only way to future-proof yourself. So when one of these formats eventually fails, you'll still be able to play everything you have, regardless of which, and you won't have to buy a new machine. That's the only way to do it, because if you buy an HD DVD player now, or you buy a Blu-ray player now, a year down the line, 2 years down the line, you may wind up having a useless brick in front of you that you're going to have to replace.
It's like any other media format that's come out since VHS. Look at CDs or anything like that. All the first generation players are massive, they're huge, they cost a lot of money. There's no guarantee that it'll work with future versions or revisions of the spec for Blu-ray or HD DVD. Anyone who buys it now is a complete early adopter, the earliest adopter possible in the technology market. They have a high def setup already, and they really want to push whatever they have to the limit, because you can run 1080i or all the different HD DVD formats or HD TV formats out to your monitor. So with that, we wanted to get into a quick discussion around security and your PC. We'll go through quickly what we all have set up at home, and then I want to talk a little bit about this whole security myth that I think exists on the internet, how people are more afraid about all these things that don't really exist, all this phantom security that is more peace of mind than anything else. So I'll go through quickly my system, what I have installed. I have absolutely no antivirus software installed, and I can't remember the last time I installed something. I think I might have installed Nod 32 maybe about a year and a half ago, just to see if I had a virus on my data drive. But other than that, I run zero virus scanners on my computer. I keep the Windows firewall up, and I'm behind a router, and I use Firefox. Other than that, that is the extent of my security on my computer, and I have never had a critical problem. I don't know if it's unique, but when I set up computers for other people or do formats or buy them a new computer and then right out of the box I format it, I never install an antivirus suite. And I say if you have a problem, chances are you can go into safe mode, and if you have a problem, you're going to call me anyways. So don't bother to bog down the system the whole time you have it. And if you're just doing general web browsing, general downloading, I really don't think you need to run an everyday antivirus piece of software in your system tray eating up system resources. So, Chris, we'll go for your setup next.
I'll get into how I think you're a crazy son of a gun later on, but right now, I love you, man. Right now, for myself, I'm running Nod 32. Nice and lightweight antivirus. Doesn't intrude like other Norton systems do. And I'm using the NAT firewall on my Linksys router. Other than that, you know, smart browsing, educated browsing, know what you're doing. Don't just download everything on the internet or the hot Paris Hilton picture that everyone sends you in the email, and you're fine.
Chris, I basically have the exact same setup as you do. I have Nod 32 running along with my NAT firewall. I believe in the same habits of safe browsing, paying attention to what you do on your computer, and not blindly clicking on whatever pops up on your screen. I don't agree with saying not to have antivirus. I mean, somebody like us who have a better understanding of how you can get infected and whatnot, I mean, sure, that would come down to basic preference on a user's part, but let's face it, we're dealing with 90% of the computing world that haven't a clue what they're doing, and they're the exact reason why I do have antivirus. They're the ones I don't trust to say, you know, my friends emailing me or whatnot. Also, my business contacts. I don't trust these people with their knowledge of safe habits on computing-wise, and I think it's a mistake not to have some sort of protection in place.
Let me ask you a question right quick, Paul. You said you don't run any antivirus or anything like that, but are you behind a router, like a NAT router or
definitely
something like that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm behind a completely up-to-date D-Link router.
Well, see, yeah. No, right, okay. If you take the average user that may take their PC home and, you know, they've got a computer at home, they get, you know, broadband, cable, DSL, whatever, and, you know, if they hook it up themselves or have some, you know, the guy from the cable company come out and hook it up or whatever, and they plug it, you know, straight into their PC, if they have absolutely no protection at all on that machine, they're screwed. I mean, it's just bottom line, end point, game over. They're going to get hit with something. And, you know, you can put a lot of faith in you know, the stability of your system and the fact that you've not gotten anything, because you are a smart user. You do browse, you know, safely, and, you know, and take into consideration, you know, where the things that you're looking at and where you're going in order to keep your PC from getting infected with those types of things. But being behind that NAT router is what's saving you, I would dare say if you would take that NAT router out of place and put your PC, you know, take that NAT router out of place tonight, put your PC on, you know, straight on the cable modem or, you know, the DSL modem or whatever you've got, you're going to get hit with something.
Yeah, well, I guess now that you guys have all ganged up on the Canadian, I should explain a little further what I mean by this. My contention is that the majority of viruses out there, this whole notion, like, if you ask any common user, you say, okay, well, what's the most important thing on your computer, like, to keep it safe? They'll say, oh, well, I have to have an antivirus suite, right? I don't think they realize anything like how viruses work, how viruses aren't really the things that are in the forefront right now. They should be more worried about spyware than anything, of a virus. Like, if you get an email, like you guys said, you have to practice safe computing. Like, don't click on, like, no, you don't want to meet her or whatever, right? All those pop-ups that come up, right? I should say, too, when I do a format, the first thing I do is install Windows XP slipstreamed with SP2. They're all behind NAT routers because they do all their networking, too. But, yeah, I do an install of XP with SP2, and then I run AutoPatcher. This is before I've done anything on the internet. So I download AutoPatcher off Neowin. And if you haven't tried AutoPatcher, it's a great little piece of software. It's like an offline version of Windows Update. So I run that, then I plug it in, get any device drivers or anything that it's missing, get it up to date, authenticate it through Windows Genuine Advantage, and then set automatic updates to on, and then I keep the Windows firewall up and make sure they're behind something. I've only had one person ever make me put an antivirus on their computer, and it was not 32, and it's running fine, there's no problems, but I still think the majority of things out there, it's all hype. A lot of the things around viruses, yes, you might get a virus, but look at things like MS Blaster, a virus that hit about 3 years ago. It just, we had antivirus protection at work. We had to go to every computer manually and remove it because the antivirus software didn't do anything. And I think that running something like that on your computer all the time, it's just peace of mind that doesn't really do anything for you.
Right, but you have to realize, too, that complacency is what the people who create these viruses take advantage of. And as soon as people stop being concerned about security, stop being concerned about protecting themselves against viruses and loss of data, that's as soon as these people are going to come right back up with more malicious code. Any of the people I know, I would never let them run a system without an antivirus. I don't care if they're installing AVG, Avast, as long as they're not installing Norton or McAfee, which have huge slowdowns on the system. I'm making sure they have something installed because, like Don was saying before, how he doesn't trust his contacts. Well, I don't trust the people I know. I don't want to have to hear, a week or two later that something's wrong with their system. They don't understand what's going on. They think they might have a virus. I'd rather them be 100% safe. You get a software package like Nod32, even Microsoft OneCare now, or Windows Live OneCare, whatever it is. And, it's lightweight. It doesn't interfere with anything you're doing. It doesn't slow down your system all that, if at all, never mind all that much. And, it keeps you safe just in case. Just like driving in a car, they tell us to wear seatbelts, and 99% of the time you're not going to get into an accident, but that one time something goes wrong, you want to make sure you're protected.
Well, we'll come back to this quick, but I wanted to say, too, that we can agree on a few things. A, use an alternative browser, and at least until IE7 comes out, because I think we all use Firefox here, and I think Firefox is the greatest thing to help keep your computer safe. Firefox or Opera or any of those K-Lemon or whatever you want to use. As long as it is an Internet Explorer right now, I think you're in good shape. I think we also agree that you really shouldn't use Norton. I've never had a good experience with Norton, and things that make me cry, I guess number one or two, would be people who end up buying the live update renewal at the end of their 1 year term or whatever, and they pay, I forget if it's $20 or $30 American to get the definitions for the next year. But I don't know, I just think it's all hype, and the one time where it actually does happen, it'll either be hardware failure or it'll be something that's completely beyond what your antivirus scanner can handle anyways. And I just don't see the plus in having an antivirus scanner running all the time on your system, chewing up all those system resources, planning for a contingency that may or may not come. And if it does come, it has to be that one specific instance of being a virus. I still think you should be way more worried about spyware, and if you use Firefox or Opera or anything like that, you really don't have to worry about that anymore.
Well, I do agree with you that spyware really is and adware is the forefront of concern at this point. That's the more rampant spreading issue. But I deal with a lot of novice users, and I see how they browse, and I tell them how to do, the type of habits they need to have while cruising the web. But a lot of them don't do it. They forget. They don't understand. It's just as far for a novice user, it's something that it's better safe than sorry. I'd rather them put a lightweight antivirus and know how to do an adware scan than not have anything else, not have anything at all.
I don't want to knock the end user, but at the same time, I'm just going to come out and say it. The average end user, you can tell them 100 times, don't click on every email you get. Everything that comes in your email, don't go to these, all these crap websites that you keep going to. You're getting all this junk from all these places, and that's why you get all this junk email and blah, blah, blah. But, you can tell it to them over and over and over again, but it's not, you know, the bottom line is they're not always going to listen, and they don't understand, you know, like we do, you know, where all of that comes from, and why they, you know, why they should be concerned. And, you know, especially in businesses, you know, it's just, I can't in good faith tell my clients, no, you don't need an antivirus software. And, you know, as we discussed earlier, you're behind a NAT router. That's, you know, that's okay. That's well and good, and that's protecting you now. But don't be, you know, fooled into thinking that just because you're behind a NAT router means that you're safe either. You know, a network address translation router is not a firewall. I mean, it's hiding your internal IP address from the, you know, from the external connection, from the, you know, the internet. But there are several ways that a NAT router can be penetrated. You know, discovering and exploiting open ports, or, you know, scanning open admin ports for, you know, default passwords, you know, which everybody should change the default admin password on their router when they get it, if they haven't. But, you know, there are several other ways, you know, spoofing trusted from addresses, things like that. There's just a whole lot of things out there that can happen, and you know, a good firewall. Like I said, I run a Linux-based firewall. It's free. It's open source. It takes an old PC and a couple of network cards, and you can have a full-fledged Linux-based firewall system that does, you know, a ton of things that you can customizations you can add to it, content filtering, time limiting for, you know, the kids to keep them off at certain hours or whatnot, couple that with, you know, a good free for the home user, a good free antivirus software. You know, I know you guys were talking about Nod is a good antivirus software. I use Avast, and I'm sitting here looking at it right now. I'm using 15 megs of RAM, no CPU utilization, and it's sitting here running in the background doing fine, and never had any problems with it. But, you know, like I said, I think counting on, you know, hiding behind a NAT router and things like that, it's, you know, for the average user that doesn't browse safe and doesn't browse smart and doesn't, you know, always not open those emails, I don't think it's
right.
A good idea.
And I mean, let's ask this question then. Have any of you guys actually experienced data loss and or corruption because the person wasn't running a virus scanner? Or is it, do you guys have virus scanners on all the computers so you wouldn't have that example at all?
I have had clients that have lost data because they were running antivirus software that was out of date, that missed, you know, that they hadn't paid for a subscription renewal or whatever. And this is in a commercial environment, and they didn't have the latest antivirus definitions, and the system became grossly infected to the point of data loss. I have experienced that.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I have a friend who's had a lot of problems with her computer because of an out-of-date Norton subscription, and, you know, she didn't lose any data, you know, she just had to clean up the virus, but it's still, if she had an updated subscription, she wouldn't have had the virus in the first place. We wouldn't have had to clean it up. There wouldn't have been any problems. It would have been all done and solved for, but now, you know, I just don't want people getting complacent, that's all. I've had minor infections in the past when I chose to be a courageous guy, I'll say, and try running without an antivirus, only to install one a few months later and find out, well, there was a virus I got from some JavaScript on a malicious web page a few months ago. Didn't do much, but, you know, it corrupted a few files, which I had to wind up deleting. It's not worth the risk, in my opinion. I'm a computer savvy guy, more so now than I was way back then, but, you know, I don't want to. I don't feel comfortable even getting complacent myself. Never mind letting people who may not know as much as I do, like my family members, for instance, get complacent in their antivirus protection.
Let me add one more thing, right quick. You've got to keep in mind that you know, from spyware, pop-ups, adware, emails. Those aren't the only places you can get viruses. Companies, software companies, have sent out CDs, retail CDs that people have bought in the stores that they didn't realize it at the time, but it had a virus on it. I mean, they take the software home, installed it, all of a sudden they had to, you know, luckily someone had an antivirus program on their, you know, on their system that came up and said, whoa, this thing's got a virus on it. So, you know, I mean, there's several ways that you can become infected.
Yeah, and I just want to point out, too, actually, Newman ran a story about it maybe a month or so ago that HP was accidentally shipping printer drivers with an old virus on it, and, well, oops, you know, you got to be careful. You never know when you're going to get hit, where from, how, you know, it can be from someone you really trust, like Hewlett Packard or a major software publisher who actually let something slip through the system. You know, we're generally smart people, but let's face it, the average user is not going to just understand the whole concept of safe browsing as much as some people like us would.
Right, and I guess we'll end on what we do agree with here. We do agree that having a secure platform to start with, having SP2, if you don't have SP2 on your system and you still think it's, well, it's not stable or it'll mess your programs up, please install it, because, I mean, that's the greatest thing that ever happened for Windows XP as of right now with the Security Center and everything. We do agree that Norton and a lot of the big-name commercial brand antivirus software offerings are less than desirable to put on your system because of either enormous renewal fees or just reduced system performance. And I guess we also agree that you have to keep your system up to date. Don't plug it in. If you reformat, make sure it's SP2 and it's integrated. And make sure you run AutoPatcher and keep your system up to date. And if you run a virus scanner, I guess I will admit that for the common basic Joe Schmo end user, you should be running something in the background. But I mean, the people I do, maybe I'm living in a little bubble here, but the people I do support for, they sort of know what they're doing with computers, and I don't mind helping them out, and I haven't had an issue, and this is what I've been sticking with. But I'm interested to see what you guys have to say. So post in the comment of or the comment section of our podcast for this week what you guys run and who you agree with on this, what you should be running in the background, and how much security you should have. So with that, we'll end this week's edition of the NeoWinCast. My thanks to Chris, Don, and Shane being on this one. Todd is having Comcast issues this week, so he wasn't able to join us. I will be on hiatus for about 4 weeks or so hopefully Mr. Bang Bang will keep you guys well hosted for the time that I'm gone. Special thanks to Shane and Tim Dore, especially Tim, for doing all the editing, and we'll see you here next week on the NeoWin.net NeoWinCast.